Good morning, and welcome to Politico Energy. It's Monday, December 9th, and I'm your host, Kelsey Tamburino. Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron. UN climate change talks enter the final week in Madrid today after a week of little development. So far, a deal to craft an international trading market to help reduce carbon pollution has proven elusive to the largely technical experts gathered at the COP25 conference since last week.
Not much has been accomplished so far. In fact, in a lot of ways, countries have hardened their positions because not much has gotten done.
That's pro Zach Coleman, and he's in Madrid following the conference, where now top government officials from around the world are on the ground for the negotiations.
The negotiators who have been here to this point have a limited sheet of how far they're allowed to go on certain issues handed by their governments. So in a way, they just don't have the green light to make complicated deals. So when you get these foreign ministers, financial ministers, they're people who are closer to the leader of these countries, so they actually can act with a little bit of political gravitas and make compromises, make deals, maybe break out from the confines of which they had constricted their negotiators. So what you're going to see here is a little bit more creativity, a little bit more free rein, and that's going to help break some of these impasses, or at least that's was hoped for.
Zach is following how two major issues move in the negotiations.
Big item on the table is how to design rules underpinning an international carbon market. There's two sections that are really in play here. One that would govern trading between countries that have carbon prices or emission schemes. Another that would govern some of the rules and accounting on credits that were awarded under a previous system created by the Kyoto Protocol. There's a question of whether to even bring any of those credits over to this new system under the Paris Agreement, because many of those credits actually didn't lead to any more emissions reductions than would have otherwise occurred. And there's a few countries that hold a lot of these credits who want to ensure that there is some place for them in this new Paris regime, because otherwise they're just out of luck. The other thing I'm watching for at the climate conference is what kind of presence the U.S. has and what role youth movements play at the climate conference. The U.S. obviously doesn't have political staff coming to the conference. The White House isn't sending anybody. We're going to have career officials here. They're technically savvy. They are respected. They are no-nonsense negotiators. But the limitations that career staff have, that's what the U.S. is facing here too. They don't have the political backing to make creative deals and to break log jams. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate issues that might be important to U.S. interests.
Last week, climate activists increased the pressure on negotiators and politicians taking part in the climate talks.
Hola Madrid! ¿Cómo estáis?
On Friday, thousands of youth protesters took to the streets of Madrid to pressure nations to move faster on cutting greenhouse gas emissions.
We are in the middle of a climate and ecological emergency, and we need to start treat this crisis like a crisis, and we need to step out of our comfort zones.
On the Hill, negotiators are aiming to tie up a deal on the National Defense Authorization Act and could file the conference report as soon as today, unveiling the outcome of a handful of energy and environment issues that have sought to hitch a ride on the measure. As of Friday, the two most sought provisions relating to PFAS chemicals were out of the bill, according to the Democratic leaders of the House Armed Services and Energy and Commerce Committees. It remains unclear if sanctions against the Nord Stream 2 pipeline make the cut.
Time is of the essence.
Sanctions on the project are a priority for Senator Ted Cruz, who has put pressure on the Trump administration to block the pipeline.
If the pipeline is completed, it will be the fault of the members of this administration who sat on their rear ends and didn't exercise the clear power.
This is likely the last chance for legislation that would impact the pipeline connecting Russian gas fields to Germany.
And the only thing that would allow this pipeline to be built is bureaucratic inertia and dithering within the administration. So I very much.
And today, Republicans on the House Energy and Commerce Committee will host an Energy and Environment Innovation Showcase to highlight investments in the development and deployment of breakthrough technologies to reduce emissions.
I mean, let's talk about innovation and conservation and adaptation and those things. The Democrats are still locked into what? Taxation?
In the lead up to today's event, Republicans on the committee touted a list of 12 bipartisan bills they say Democrats could work with them on in 2020 to reduce emissions and promote clean energy. The list includes a bill to support carbon dioxide utilization and direct air capture research, as well as one to improve forest management activities. Subscribe to the Morning Energy newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy and subscribe to the podcast for free on your favorite podcast player. You can listen to the show on your smart speaker. Just search for the Politico Energy Podcast. Thanks, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Powering the world forward means pushing boundaries for the future of energy. And Chevron's doing it by committing $100 million to its Future Energy Fund. They're investing in companies that are exploring emerging technology and promoting innovation across the energy landscape. Innovations like electric vehicle technology to enable more charging more efficiently, and technologies that capture CO2 and transform it into low-carbon fuels. Chevron, helping the world move towards energy that's more affordable, more reliable, and ever cleaner.